Welcome to Commas.
Commas is all things tech.
The culture and technology coming together.
Life hacks.
The practicality right now in the inefficiency of the internet of buying and selling stuff is extraordinary.
Entrepreneurship advice.
I think the first thing is you got to understand your business inside out.
Love and tech.
We've almost reduced dating to kind of this very momentary snap of a person.
It's gonna be a fire show.
I have yet to see something these days that's truly differentiated.
New advice and new inspiration every show.
This really is about the next generation of creators going faster, further than we did.
And now, Sequoia Blodgett.
Now let's start stacking them commas.
On this episode, we catch up with former NFL player Mike Brown, and he teaches us how to get in on the ground floor of startup investments so we can make that tech money. And I'll let you know why with high risk comes high reward.
Entrepreneurship advice. Learn from the hottest and most successful investors, founders, and innovators in the game.
Determine your greatness.
It's time to get your knowledge up.
Okay, for sure.
Hey, what's poppin'? You are tuned into Commas, and we've got Mike Brown from WinWin in the building. How are you doing, Mike?
Doing great, man. Down here in L.A., been ripping and running, but love the opportunity to come chop it up with Sequoia, you know?
As always.
Yeah.
So for the people who don't know Mike, I want to know your background. Tell us, I obviously know your background, yeah. But like they want to know your background. So tell us about your story. How did you get to where you are as a startup today?
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, it's a pretty unique story. I like to call it tackling the tech. So I'm from Houston, Texas, born and raised, and went to Duke University. Where I was on a full athletic scholarship. And, you know, I always tell people that I just so happen to know how to tackle people. You know, coming out of high school as a 4.0 president of the engineering club, but, you know, was tackling folks pretty well. Took those talents to Duke. You know, was a two-time All-American, led the country in tackles my senior year. But I was more proud that I graduated early. So had plans for law school, got an opportunity to tackle more people, this time for a little bit of money. So did that in the NFL. And
wait, you skipped around a lot. So you had plans for law school, but what happened?
But I got signed in the league. So, okay. You know, the point being that, you know, I was just as, you know, active off the field as I was on the field. And so I was, you know, I pledged a fraternity, Omega Psi Phi, shout out to the bros, and, you know, was the president of the MPHC, like basically the Greek Council, president of the chapter. So I was very active, you know, across campus. And, you know, when I had the opportunity to go play in the league, you know, obviously not a lot of people get that. So jumped on that. And, you know, after a few years, you know, I got a lot more interested in business. And so when I was ready to hang up the cleats, I ended up transitioning to Silicon Valley. And as you know, personally, I ended up at a place called Draper University. And the crazy thing was I didn't even know what Silicon Valley was. I didn't know what a tech startup was until 2013. And I went through Draper, finished, you know, number one in the class. And, you know, I'd made a decision. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to build something that has never existed in the world. And I spent the next year to prepare for that, you know, taught myself to code several languages, design. And then I moved to the Bay in 2014 and worked at a startup, a very, you know, popular one at the time, $32 million venture-backed company. And for me, it was just a real-world, you know, course, like how do you build a startup? So I was learning from the inside, did that for about 16 months, came up with the idea for WinWin, jumped ship in January 2016, and that's tackling the tech. And so, you know, we've been hitting the ground, you know, the last couple of years, raised some capital, hit some milestones, so... It's been a great journey so far, but we got a ways to go, and we on it.
That's his book, you guys.
In stores soon.
So let's back up to Draper. You went through Draper. We both went through Draper. Yeah. What was your experience like that caused you to say, hey, I actually want to take this on and create a company?
Man, honestly, you know, like I said, I went in so green. I didn't even know what I was really getting myself into, and I took a leap of faith. And you know, for those who don't know, it's a 9-week at my program, 9-week crash course through Silicon Valley. So, you know, we were having, you know, founders of companies come in, you know, 3 or 4 times a day and just learning about the products they built, how they got acquired for several $100 million. And I'm like, hold on, this guy is, you know, 23-year-old, you know, guy and he didn't
rich.
Got that money, ain't tackled nobody. You know what I mean? And I'm like, oh, I'm out here busting my head on people, you know, for money. So, And I felt like, you know, as I was learning a lot about tech and the things that, you know, build these companies that I'm actually a consumer of, I started to realize that, you know, I had a lot of the, I think, natural abilities or at the very least the interest and ideas, and always felt like I had the level of execution, right? And I was doing that through academics and other things. And so I saw this as an opportunity to say, you know, I can build something as well. And when I was learning how folks were literally taking an idea in their mind and building it and bringing it to life and then, you know, finding, you know, major success in that, it was pretty much a no-brainer. And so as soon as I finished the program, you know, I went back home to Houston and, you know, was literally in the garage, you know, laser focused on, you know, coding, design, really just in preparation. Because, you know, again, I was learning all of this for the first time. And I figured, like, this is a skill set that a lot of people had. And so I figured I would acquire that as well.
So when you decided to start Win-Win, it wasn't a smooth transition by any means. So tell us about the journey from, like, consumption to actually getting it to market.
Oh, yeah. No, it was crazy. You know, I had – so in terms of what we do, I had a very strong competitive advantage. And, you know, starting it – again, I'm a solo founder, and so, you know – I really just try to leverage the relationships that I started to build. I started to, you know, create a network of other folks that were founding companies, right? Some that were way farther ahead, some that were just starting. And for me, that was kind of the key. Like I used all those conversations and insights as data points and kind of informed me on certain things I should do. And not knowing that there was just, you know, a world of or a journey ahead of mistakes to be made. And, you know, really, I learned that it's your ability to survive that. And so, you know, one thing that I heard early on that I didn't necessarily think or I didn't know to be true at the time was that it always takes it costs twice as much and takes twice as long. And
yeah.
And, yeah. And, you know, this whole thing about product market fit. Right. And not having a full understanding of what you're doing until it's in the hands of consumers. Right. Because everybody, you know, we were running surveys and all types of stuff and, you know, those sound good. But when that paywall is there and they got to pull out that credit card, you know, customer behavior or user behavior is very different. So for us, you know, I ended up, you know, surrounding myself with some folks. I was fortunate enough to raise, you know, about $1 million in that first round right out the gate. And like I said, it was really because of the competitive advantage I have. You know, in short, what we do is we combine giving with gaming to make donating to charity a lot more fun. And we help, you know, we work with athletes, you know, professional athletes, and they basically host a Win-Win tournament on our platform, promote it out on social media. Fans come and they join the Pick'em Challenge hosted by, you know, your favorite athlete. And when you join, you're making a donation. So we're helping these influencers and athletes mobilize their audience in support of the cause. And the biggest, you know, challenge for a company like ours is having the athletes, obviously. And, you know, again, given my background, I had, you know, our first 30 or 40 players were literally in my phone. So I was able to call those guys, get, you know, their feedback and have them on as partners. And so that was one of the big fortunate parts for me was that I was able to have that kind of traction before we had a product and I was able to raise. But there's a whole element of issues that came because of that. Right. And you know, we had capital that could get us to market. Problem was we didn't have that product market fit just yet. And so we really started to get into a beta mode. And that's where we started to learn and had this journey of like iterations and, you know, challenges to overcome and have to lay people off and conserve capital. So it definitely has been a journey up to this point.
Talk about going through that process. So you would hire people, you thought this was you were going to achieve product market fit, and then all of a sudden it just wasn't happening. So what was that process like for you?
It was one of the hardest things I had to go through, honestly, because, you know, like I said, everybody was really into it. And you know, the first version of kind of the at least the concept conceptually, it made a ton of sense. Right. We were leveraging fantasy sports gaming and these fantasy tournaments would be hosted by athletes. And then the money you donate or bet or whatever would go to the player's charity. And then you'd be able to win dinner with the player. Right. Instead of money. And so we went to market with that and I'd hired, I mean, 10 people full time in the Bay, you know, before we ever launched. And you know, if you know anything about a burn rate, ours was a little crazy. And it wasn't for long, though. Right. One of the things I kind of look back and I'm happy about was the foresight to kind of see at that moment, like, wait a minute, this traction isn't happening as fast as we thought. You know, our burn rate has not declined. Right. So having to like make a really, really tough decision to say, you know what, we need to go back into the lab and, you know, work this out and you know, focus on the product and that what we're actually doing, and couldn't have 10 people sitting around at that time. So, you know,
it was like everybody out.
Everybody out. And I had this analogy around like, you know, we're on a plane, right? And we got it off the ground. Cause again, I incorporated, you know, January 2016. And, you know, now we're talking September 2016. Got a million in the bank, you know, 10 employees. And, you know, we launched, we built the product, we did all of those things, and we launched that NFL season. And, you know, it's like, boom, we got off the ground, but we haven't reached cruising altitude just yet. And now I start to see, I feel this slight decline, yep. like, hold on, what's going on? Like, we, you know, I didn't hear that little ding, you're now free to move about the cabin. And so, you know, and if fuel is money, we were hemorrhaging money at the time, right? That fuel was just leaking. And so, you know, I started scrambling. I said, look, you know, let's throw off, you know, bags and chairs off the plane to lighten this thing up. Cause we had, you know, I'm even embarrassed talking about it now, but we had catered lunches, you know, we had got an office, right? And this was me coming from a startup that had raised $15 million at the time. And that's, I felt that that's what you got to have top talent. And so
he was trying to be Facebook out the gate.
Out the gate. Like, we're going to have the bombest, we're going to have the best office, we're going to have everything. And, you know, again, had to realize that, okay, we're throwing off seats, chairs, whatever, luggage. And then I said, look, you know, now I'm walking around with parachutes. I said, hey, you know, I got to, you got to jump out. You know what I mean? You got to jump out and let me get this plane back on the right track, and we'll, you know, we'll swoop around and pick you back up. You know what I mean? But I don't want to be, you know, selfish and like let this plane crash and burn with all of us on here. If it's going to burn and crash and burn, it'll just be me in the cockpit. And so, you know, people took it, you know, relatively well. You know, I mean, we had some people that left the job to come aboard, you know, a lot of excitement. And this was, you know, about a month and a half over the course of like the first 2 months, this all happened. We moved right out the office immediately, had to break lease, all of that.
Wow.
And it was just so tough. You're talking all nighters and it was very, very stressful, but it was necessary. And I think, you know, you got to be able to make those tough calls and those hard decisions and have those hard conversations. And we had those, and, you know, I'm happy to say, I think it was the right decision, because, and even our investors were like, yeah, I mean, we all were hoping you hit it out the park, but, you know, the fact that you were able to, you know, hold the brakes and, you know, make those tough decisions, we actually respected even more, you know what I mean? And I felt so relieved, because I was like, oh, man, they think I'm not, you know, this isn't going to be a success. And they were like, I think one of our investors told us that I think something like 22 or 23% of companies are actually what they started off as.
Right.
It always pivots, either mm-hmm. whether it's huge or whether it's small, but like you got to get through this iterative process before you really start to survive and thrive.
I think that's so important that you hit upon that, because a lot of people feel like they're going to launch and that's it, right?
Yeah.
And that's literally never, ever happens. Mm-mm. So, and then you were balancing a family at the time too. So how did your wife take that? How did your, like, what was that process?
Man, she's a champion. And, you know, honestly, when we made the move to the Bay, it was the biggest leap of faith. You know, we were coming from Houston, and, you know, I was like, look, I want to build a company. I want to get into startups. We got to be in Silicon Valley to do that. And I don't believe that now, by the way. But at the time, I said, we're going
to
go out.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to go out to the most expensive place in the country and get into an industry I just learned, I found out about. And you know, we had a 7-month-old. We had just gotten married before that. And then right before we left, we found out we had another one on the way. And so, again, I could have told her I was going to build a staircase to the moon. She'd start chopping down trees. She was about that life.
That's,
and you know, she's in education, so you know, she got a job out there, and we made the move. And so going through that process, even when I made the decision, because mind you, I was at a startup doing pretty well, and I went from like entry level to leading the growth team. I was in leadership, you know, within 6 months. And you know, so we kind of settling into the tech Bay Area life, doing well. We had just moved, and you know, now I'm like, I got this idea. I think, you know, this is why we're here. You know, it's time to get active. And so, you know, we had to make some tough decisions, even personally, like, all right, let's downsize so that, cause I was like, I think I got to raise some money. You know what I mean? I don't know how long that's going to take. So she's been a trooper ever since day one. And, you know, she's obviously seen the lowest of the lows and during those times, and just been supportive, you know, holding down the kids, you know, as she's working at Stanford now, and like, you know, holding it down and when she needs to, because I have to travel and raise money or whatever and figure this whole thing out. And So she's really the reason why this whole thing is able to happen. And now, you know, that we've been seeing the successes that we've been seeing, you know, I think she understands, obviously, the commitment and sacrifice that she made. And now I love that she can see the fruits of that labor, you know, from both of us. So I think the one thing is definitely pretty hard, you know, having a family while trying to build a company. Right. That I always tell people, I got two other startups at home that are 4 and 5 years old. Right. And so but now. What I look back at, it, I said, man, it was really the thing that kind of pushed me through a lot of those tougher times where I gotta make this happen for Michael Jr. and Layla. You know what I mean? So I'm looking at it like this is my why, right? And while it was hard to have those, you know, difficult decisions between, you know, traveling for a week to go get this bag or, you know, being at the house, you know, looking back on it, it made me make sure that trip was very impactful and I maximized it. So it definitely was tough or is tough, but, you know, I look at it from that angle and I think it helps, actually.
So you got through the trenches.
Yeah.
You found product market fit. Where are you now with it?
So now, you know, we just achieved that this last season.
Love it season. You were such a football player.
Well, I mean, that figuratively and literally, like we work with athletes during, you know, the NFL season, NBA season. So this past NFL season, we ran our last beta. And you know, we've really been focused on conversion funnel, right? Because we're working with these influential athletes, influencers that are sending their fans to our platform. And so we have to make sure that the conversion funnel is very tight so that from click to transaction, right, is efficient. And now the one metric I talk about a little bit is, you know, we have 5% full funnel conversion on organic social media traffic. And what that means is, something that a player posts, 5% of the people have clicked and went through the whole process, creating an account, making all the predictions, and then making a voluntary donation of about $53 a pop. And when compared to industry standard, you know, it's usually 1.5% or much less. In fact, when you run targeted, you know, Facebook ads, right, you're usually going to see 3 to 5% full funnel conversion, click to transaction. And we're at the top end of that and haven't run any marketing to date. So, you know, for us, we're very, very proud of like all the iterations that got us to this point. And we know there's a journey ahead. When you start to do it at scale thing, you have to, you know, be very cognizant of the things that change. So now we're preparing actually for our full scale launch, which is coming up this NFL season. And, you know, we're really going to use a lot of our athletes within our network, some great causes. So at the very moment, I'm raising capital in a couple different ways, one of which I think we may touch on. But, you know, growing out the team, we're in the process of a company relocation, which I actually haven't fully announced yet. So this will be part of that. But we're going to Houston, Texas, which I can cover a little bit about because it's not personal, but it's more around Houston really investing heavily into its tech ecosystem. They've been recruiting the company. We came to terms on a deal. And so we're relocating because it'll be the number one. It'll be the sports tech capital of the world. And so that's right in the field that we play in. So that's where we are, just preparing now. And, you know, it's really, I feel like, you know, going back to 2016, like now it's time to really do what we thought we all could do. And now we've gone through that inevitable process of, you know, just pain and iterations and learnings. And now to be able to show that on the grand stage is going to be dope.
That is so sick. So you're from Houston.
From the
So H. Was that a determining factor for you to move back to Houston? Or were you like, hey, I see this as a brand new opportunity? Because like you touched upon before, a lot of people think that they need to be in Silicon Valley to build a tech company, which is not really the case. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, contrary to belief, no, it was not the reason in terms of me being from Houston. That was just a huge, you know, cherry on top, you know, the whole situation, because quite honestly, we were looking at Austin, right? Because we're in the Bay, right? But what we're doing as a company doesn't necessarily require us to be in Silicon Valley, right? You know, it's usually based on like the engineers, right? And because tech has become so democratized through places like Atlanta, obviously LA, but Atlanta, Detroit, Austin, you know, you can do it and there's capital there as well. So we were looking at Austin. Long story short, about August of last year, got connected to one of the private entities in Houston called the Canon that's really leading the charge down there. And again, I'm from Houston, but I hadn't been checking for what was going on. And so I was just blown away. For example, the Canon has a building that will open, I believe, next month as soon as we get down there. And it, when it opens, it'll become the largest tech workspace in the world. It's about 120,000 square feet. And, you know, to see that and then to see how, and it sits on a 32-acre plot called Founders District, and like the Houston ecosystem is really kind of burgeoning. And so for us, you know, that was kind of the recruitment process that started, right? We had different entities like, hey, you're from Houston. What's it going to take to get you down here? You know, I told them, and they made that happen. And so I'm excited to be going home and doing what I love in front of the folks that I love, you know, in terms of family, friends, everybody's down there, you know, from that standpoint. And then, like I said, more specifically, sports tech. So they're like really leaning into it. And so we're coming down there, you know, leaving Silicon Valley and being able to, you know, essentially be supported in a way that's quite frankly is not happening in the Bay. We're just another one of the thousands of startups, which is fine. You know, we've been doing our thing. But to go to Houston and have that level of support has already started to bear fruit. So, you know, that was the reason for going to Houston. And I'm honored to be kind of the, you know, the native son, if you will, to go back home and, you know, do my best to add value to that ecosystem.
That is amazing. So you're going to Houston, you're taking the family, you're taking the company, and you're raising a new round. Tell us about the way that you're raising this round that's non-traditional from the way that you did before.
Yeah. So, you know, I mentioned like, you know, we've been fortunate, right, through even this beta process. You know, we've raised to date about $1.2 million, you know, from the likes of Backstage Capital, the Black Star Fund, 500 Startups, Sandhill Angels, you know, a very prominent angel group in the Bay. And, you know, we even got some athletes involved, right? Like Malcolm Jenkins, 2-time Super Bowl champion for the Eagles, you know, was an early investor. And, you know, that process, that's a whole other conversation on the more traditional route as a, you know, Black founder. But, you know, again, fortunate enough to do what we did. And so now that we've reached product market fit, I decided we're going to raise a second round, but we're doing it in two ways. We're going to do part of it traditionally, right? So accredited investors, you know, angel investors, VCs. So we're actually having great progress on that right now. But then on the other side, I started to really learn about equity crowdfunding. And, you know, I watched some friends of mine like Don Dickinson and Harold Hughes from Bandwagon, you know, go out there and really put themselves out there and, you know, raise money from the crowd. Right. And for those that don't know, you know, Obama passed the Jobs Act, right, that, you know, went through in 2016 and it now enables anybody, right, accredited or non-accredited alike, to invest in private companies. Before you had to make $250,000 a year or more or have, you know, $1 million in liquid assets. And so that's like 8% of America. And,
right.
And so now to be able to open this up, it's just been we just launched an equity crowdfunding campaign with Republic, you know, I think one of the leading platforms out there. And, you know, to open up the doors of the ship essentially and say, hey, everybody can come in. You can invest in win-win now for as little as $100. You don't have to be an accredited investor. And, you know, I think we just hit $30,000, you know, the other day and or like yesterday, and we just announced it. And so, you know, really, really honored to like be able to let my friends and family and folks that have been believing in me and the company, you know, from day one, they just didn't have an opportunity to capture that upside. Because I can tell you, we're not doing this for fun. Like we're doing this to change our lives, you know, set my kids up, our families up, all of our employees. And so, to be able to have my friends and family, you know, capture that upside as an equity stakeholder in the company, you know, means a lot. So we're right in the middle of that process now. And so being able to see, like I said, the successes and now having us in there with great momentum, you know, I just think it opens up so many opportunities for, you know, founders, particularly minorities who have a, you know, more difficult time. You can look at the stats, you know, to pitch essentially old white dudes, you know, to get that capital. And, you know, now that, you know, you have an alternative way to raise it, I think it's phenomenal. It's a win-win, quite honestly, to be able to do that.
The plug.
Yeah.
Talk about the difference between equity crowdfunding and traditional crowdfunding, because some people don't know what that means and why it's more beneficial to invest versus donate.
Yeah, exactly. And I always remind people when I'm telling them, like, not to be confused with, you know, Kickstarter, Indiegogo, or even, you know, GoFundMe is a crowdfunding, right? And so, the difference is, you know, I think the most relevant difference or the most relevant platforms are like Kickstarter, Indiegogo, right? Because you're basically donating to help some person or whatever bring a project to life, whether it's a film or, you know, a product or whatever. But you don't really get anything out of that. You get some perks usually, right? You might get the first units of the product that ship, right? And that's cool. And you can feel great about the, you know, community coming together to bring this thing to life. But the huge difference, obviously, is now equity crowdfunding, hence the name. You're able to receive equity in exchange. And so what I tell people, you know, it's like, look, we have all the information on the deal page. We have a nice video that we put together that really walks you through the platform and how the product works, you know, and the things that we've done, the capital we've raised, the traction we've seen, to really give you as an investor a full understanding of the company. And then you should make the decision based off that. I always tell people it's not a love offering or, you know, a support fund. Like, this is an investment. So look at it as such and, you know, invest as much as you can that but understanding the risk as well, and knowing that it could evaporate, you know, and sometimes it does. And so you're investing in, you know, really the concept and the company, but more so us, the team, the founder, and, you know, your belief in my ability to bring this thing to life in the way that we've projected.
So with equity crowdfunding, what are the terms when you go and invest? Because traditionally, a lot of people, like you said, are used to the crowdfunding, the Kickstarters, the GoFundMes, Indiegogos. But with equity crowdfunding, you are actually an angel investor at that point. Mm-hmm. So what are the terms that you go into the investment with?
Yeah, and so there's a few different things, right? I'll only speak from, you know, what we're doing as kind of our terms, right? And so, excuse me, what Republic actually created was, it's called a crowd safe, right? And so basically this is a specific vehicle for crowdfunding platforms where basically your money that you're investing, whether it's $100 or $1,000, $10,000, it's going to have terms, right? And you're not getting like a percentage right now, right? So that money is going to convert into equity, right? That then gives you your share of the company. Based on, you know, the amount that you invest, right? So you get a slice of the pie. It might be, you know, miniature slice, but you got a slice nonetheless, or it could be a little bigger. It's up to you. And what happens is there's a valuation cap, right? So our valuation cap is set at $10 million. And so long story short, what that means is when you invest through the CrowdSafe, when we go, basically the conversion happens at liquidity, right? So an exit. So, you know, when we get acquired or IPO, then your money will convert into equity based on the terms of not necessarily based on the terms of the acquisition, but the $10 million valuation. So, safe actually means sale of future equity, right? And so being able to, you know, get this equity for a cheaper price in the future, is beneficial for an investor, right? You're taking a risk because there's a lot of things that could kill the company, for example, but by taking that risk, you get rewarded essentially by having this conversion. So you're getting equity at a discount in the future date. Yeah.
I love that you explained that, because a lot of people are like, well, how do I get into Facebook? How do I get into Snapchat? Like all of these companies that are having their IPOs and their exits, their acquisitions, whatever. Now this gives you an opportunity to actually get in at the ground floor. So for the folks who are interested in investing, how do they go about doing that?
Yeah. So, you know, you can go to republic.co/win-win. And the process, I mean, honestly, I'm just blown away about how easy it is. I mean, less than 2 minutes for sure. Right. But you go to the campaign page. And like I said, there's a lot of information and content around, you know, what we're doing, how we're doing it, who's involved and why we're doing it the best. And then from there, once you hit the blue investment button, you know, there's like a very quick process where, and I love how Republic, they have like, essentially you have to understand, like, you know, this is risky, you should diversify. So they make you check off these six boxes. And then from there, I mean, it's as simple as adding a credit card. You can connect your bank, put whatever amount that you have, you know, in mind to invest, and then boom, is done. And then the great thing that they also enable, so they did take a page out of the, you know, kind of Kickstarter model where we also have investment perks. So based on the level of investment that you make, you know, you receive different perks. So for example, at, you know, our first perk is at $250. So our minimum investment is $100. But at $250, we have like a commemorative investor book, right? And so it'll have basically everybody listed that made, you know, win-win come to life, essentially every investor. And so by doing 250, you're guaranteed to be enshrined in this commemorative book, which we'll have as a hard copy in the office as well as digitally. And again, you can be proud to know that you're enshrined in that. And, you know, as we look in the future, once this thing gets to where we know it's going to go, you know, you can be in that book. Right. And so, you know, we have different things, you know, like, for example, I think $15,000 or $10,000, you're able to actually partake in one of the win-win experiences. So like when we do the next private jet ride with the player, you know, one of the folks on that level will be able to join us. So we have different things. I encourage folks to go check it out. It's www.republic.co/win-win, and you'll pull it up, and it's very, very easy.
Perfect. And then how do they find out if they want to actually participate in Win-Win? How do they do that?
So we're going to be doing our full-scale launch here this upcoming NFL season. So, you know, they'll definitely be hearing about it. We're going to be really ramping up our marketing efforts, PR, because I think the story around the company has been very attractive, you know, and we've started to see a lot of folks engage. And so we're going to be screaming from the mountaintop, essentially saying, hey, Win-Win is now launched. And, you know, really, because we're working with these athletes, so, you know, we're not naming like specific players right now, but we got some interesting folks involved. And so when they start promoting it across social media, like, hey, you know, to my millions of fans, I'm hosting a Win-Win tournament, raising money for this impactful cause, you know, click the link in the bio. And like, that's how people will really start to hear about Win-Win. Through our partners, and then, like I said, higher level PR, press, and, you know, being as an investor, you know, in the company, I think the coolest thing about this whole setup for us is that because we're a consumer, you know, we have this consumer platform. If you were to invest, let's say, $1,000 tomorrow, and we launch this these tournaments, you know, this upcoming season, you actually have the ability to help increase the value of your own equity, right, or your own investment, because it's actually in your best interest to be using the product, right, to be sharing it out to all your friends, like, hey, join this tournament, right, transact, donate, because that just increases the value of the company, which in turn increases the value of the investment that you made. So it's really cool. So certainly everybody that invests will be well aware of the launch and all the campaigns we have coming on. And then, you know, hopefully the goal is for them to be sharing it out. And so, it's really the win-win scenario of it all, because they get equity, we get capital, and we get, you know, users now that are really vested in seeing us win because they win at the same time.
That's what's up. If you guys are interested in investing, make sure you plug in. Thank you so much, Mike, for sliding through
my
the Commas Club.
Yeah, we out here.
Mike touched upon some really interesting things when it comes to equity crowdfunding, which I really feel like as entrepreneurs, we need to be hyper aware of. And so I just want to reiterate a couple of things from his conversation earlier. So when it comes to equity crowdfunding, it's very different from traditional crowdfunding in the sense that you're not actually giving somebody a reward. The reward is actually equity in the company. So, for example, with traditional crowdfunding, if you look at the rewards like a Kickstarter, GoFundMe, Indiegogo, you might get a piece of something that is a product or service provided by the company. Whereas with equity crowdfunding, you're getting an equity percentage in the company, which means you have ownership in the company, right? Everybody's out here trying to secure the bag. We all know that tech companies are making insane investment return, right? And people are excited because they're like, oh, I'm going to invest when it IPOs. Like, I'm going to invest when it goes to the stock market, which is not where the money's made. You actually make the money investing prior to that. Well, traditionally, rounds have been closed off to accredited investors or just people who know people who know people. So that might not be you. So you don't get that opportunity to invest in an Uber and Airbnb because you're just not a part of that community or that clique, right? So equity crowdfunding has actually opened those doors to give you an opportunity to invest in those companies early stage, because that is actually where you're going to make the most money on any type of startup investment. So let's talk about a couple considerations for entrepreneurs who may be thinking about running an equity crowdfunding campaign. One of the biggest things that you have to think about is you're going to have a lot of investors on your cap table, right? So when you convert, whoever invested is going to be a part of your cap table because they essentially are going to own a piece of your company. So that's something that you should absolutely think about. Like, how are you going to manage your cap table so that that makes sense? This is an example of crowdfunding where equity crowdfunding would have been much more beneficial. So if you think about Oculus VR, when they raised their crowdfunding campaign, they got to $2.4 million. And everybody who contributed to that campaign got a $25 t-shirt. Now, later, Facebook purchased Oculus VR for $2 billion. So imagine if you had invested in Oculus as an equity crowdfunder versus traditional crowdfunding. You definitely would have benefited there. Another thing to consider when you're actually investing in an equity crowdfunding campaign is it may take some time to actually see a return on your investment, if at all. So sometimes companies don't survive, so you don't ever see a return on your investment. So you have to be willing to take the risk. But say they do, let's be positive. Say the company is successful. It may take a while before the company actually gets acquired or IPOs, which you will then get a return on your investment when that time comes, right? So you have to be super patient and understand that it's not going to happen right away. All right, so we're going to get into a little bit of a deeper conversation about what actually happens when you invest, because I know that's still really high level. So what traditionally happens is when you're investing into a crowdfunding campaign, it's just your money to the person, right? In an equity crowdfunding campaign, it's your money to a security. So your security in this case is a crowd safe. So what is a crowd safe? It's an investment contract between the investor and the company that's looking to raise the capital. So essentially, individuals will make investments in exchange for a chance to earn a return. And that shows up in a form of equity in the company, right? And if the company is acquired or IPOs, that's when your safe converts. So the crowd safe is very specific to Republic, but it's not unknown or foreign to the world of investing. A lot of investors use safes, like angel investors or VC investors use safes to invest in startups. So this is not something that's unique at all, but it gives you a chance to get in at the ground floor. So I'm sure you're wondering, so how do I actually earn my money? So your return depends on the investment amount and the company's exit valuation, which means how much the company is worth when it actually, when the event triggers. So how much is that company worth when the IPO happens or the acquisition happens, and the terms of the crowd safe. So there's different terms for different safes, but your money is going to be contingent upon a lot of those details and parameters. So the biggest question I'm sure you guys all want to know is, when can I actually expect a return? Because, I mean, I would want to know that. So it traditionally takes 4 to 6 years after an initial investment to see a return on your investment. And sometimes it can take even longer than that. So you got to be patient, and you got to have money that you can just like put away and forget that you gave it to somebody or you invested it. And then miraculously in a couple of years, it will show back up in a greater form, or it won't show back up at all. It just depends on what happens to the company. So now that we've got the risks out the way, let's talk about some of the rewards. So it's definitely said that equity crowdfunding's returns can be enormous. So most startups aren't going to hit Facebook and Dropbox returns, which are like 62,000% or 39,000% ROI, respectively, depending on which company you're looking at. A long-term investment of 5 to 8 years for the right startup could actually produce really high returns for any other asset. So that's something you should definitely think about. So Republic is the platform that Mike is using. There's a lot of other equity crowdfunding platforms, but that's the one we're going to focus on. And that's the one that's great for the average Joe to be involved on. So one of the things that you should be looking at when you're actually going to look at an investment as an angel investor, because that's what you are now, is due diligence. You got to do your own due diligence, which means you got to dig into that company yourself. And traditionally what happens is on Republic, they'll set up a profile. So you're actually going to have to do your own due diligence. So as an investor, what happens is you would dig into the financial statements, you would scrutinize the financial projections, you would be doing all that, you know, if you're a part of a firm. So now you got to do it as an angel investor. So when you're looking at a Republic profile, a lot of that information should be provided up front. So you should be seeing the financial statements from the company and the projections, the metrics, all of the details that you need to know numbers wise to know what you should be looking for. You should see what their past numbers were, what they've been doing in revenue. If they have been doing anything in revenue, you should be looking at traction. So what's their growth? So if you look at Mike's campaign, his deal terms are very simple. The minimum investment is $100. It's a crowd safe because that is the safe that Republic uses. You get a 20% discount. Basically, that just means that when an event triggers, you will have the opportunity to buy shares at 20% reduced rate. There's a valuation cap of $10 million. So that's the maximum valuation of which the investment converts into equity or shares. And their funding goal is between $25,000 and $1 million, basically. So when you look at a campaign, you want to look at who's behind the campaign. That is super important. So Mike's campaign is all about, or Mike's platform is all about pro athletes and philanthropic donations, right? And so if you look at Mike's background, he's a former NFL linebacker. He's a philanthropist. He taught himself coding. So he has direct access to the talent who would be living on his platform. And so that gives him a competitive advantage, which is super important to note. Also, something that's super important is he had previous investors who invested in a $1.2 million pre-seed round for him. And those investors were accredited investors from Backstage Capital, Sandhill Angels, Pro Athletes, Duke University, 500 Startups. So he actually has a really good track record when it comes to investors. And another thing that I think is really interesting is the size of the actual market. So you got to know that if this company is going to be able to scale really large, we got to take into consideration what the size of the market could potentially be. And the size of this market is a $410 billion market. So that means he could actually take a good share of that, right? And so those are definitely things that you should absolutely consider when you're investing. So going back to traction, we always want to know where the company came from because we don't want to hedge our bets on companies that are just out the gate because we don't know anything about them, right? So the good thing about Mike's company, Win-Win, is after 2 years of being in product development, they were able to get positive user feedback and find product market fit. So they actually have users on the platform who have used the platform and have gotten a lot of great testimonials from those users who have had great experiences. So that's really important to note. You also want to know the business model for the company because, of course, we need to know how this company is going to make money. I mean, if I'm going to put my money behind something, I want to know how the company's making money, right? And so with Win-Win, they have two different streams of revenue. So one is they retain 20% of every donor's transaction, and then brands pay them a recurring sponsorship fee for custom campaign integrations. So they've actually thought considerably about their revenue streams and how they're going to become profitable. So now we want to think about the growth of the company. So once we get to critical mass, meaning once we get to a certain magnitude, then the growth kind of tables off. So we want to know, how is he considering to continue to expand the company beyond just athletes? So they've actually thought about this thoroughly, and they want to move into creating charitable donation causes for universities, colleges, musical artists, Hollywood stars, esports, international celebrities. So this model doesn't just live in one vertical. It can transcend to different verticals, meaning the company has the potential to grow and scale larger than the segment that they're currently focusing on. So basically, it has growth potential that's bigger than just athletes. Okay, and then we got to think about, so who are the competitors in the market? Because we want to make sure that our investment has the opportunity and the potential to grow. So they've listed out their competitors in the market to be DraftMates, Omaze, and CharityBuzz. And based off of their breakdown, they're creating celebrity experiences, which some of these companies do, some of them don't. They have 100% tax deductible offering, which none of the other companies do. They have the access to promotional distribution by the celebrity because of the relationships, which only Omaze does. And their total percentage retained by the company is actually 20%. So they're retaining a good amount of the money that's being donated so that they can actually continue to grow and scale the company. You also want to consider what the launch plan is for these companies, right? You want to make sure that they actually have thought this out And you want to make sure that they have those projections in order so that at least you know how you're going to get your money back and how long it's going to take, or at least there's a plan. So when we look at WinWin's launch plan, their projections for 2019, their Q4 projections are $364,000, right? They have this plotted out all the way up until 2022, where their revenue projections are $75 million. And they've actually taken the time to go through all of the breakdowns to how they got to those numbers, right? So that's super important. We want to make sure that the companies that we're investing in have a plan. We want to make sure they have a plan to exit because we need our money back. And we want to make sure that they have a plan to grow because we also need our money back. So what else is on this roadmap? What else should we be looking for? We should be looking at competitive advantage. So WinWin is actually moving their company out of Silicon Valley to Houston because Houston is setting themselves up to be the new sports tech hub. So they're actually going to have a much stronger support system than they would have if they were in Silicon Valley. So that's super important to note. And we also want to see who's on the team, like who's behind this. So we know Mike's credentials. We know that he went and played for the NFL. And so he's very much properly positioned to run this company. But he also has a strong team of advisors. The VP of customer marketing from Stitch Fix, which we all know was a very, very successful company. NFL players are on his advisory board, and then he has some VCs on his advisory board too that are really, really strong. In addition to a great team of advisors, he has three other employees on the roster, an operations lead, a design lead, and user acquisition. And those are three key people that you need in the beginning to make sure that your company is growing effectively. So it looks good overall, right? But I can't particularly advise you to make that investment because you got to invest at your own risk. But if you do decide, go ahead and hit up republic.co/win-win.
This is the plug.
You know who's the plug.
It's time to get caught up on the hottest in tech.
Keep it locked, you heard.
With Sequoia Blodgett.
I see you, little mama.
There are constantly trends that are changing within industries, and we have to keep abreast of the information because as business owners, as entrepreneurs, as founders, we need to know what's going on all the time, right? And originally when we built up Commas, we had the idea of making sure that we were giving you information around marketing, sales, publicity, basically how to get your business off the ground. But as we grew and we iterated, we found that that just wasn't enough. So what we did in order to enhance the services is we have brought you guys the Commas Club. What the Commas Club is it's an entrepreneurship community and support system for founders. So think about it like this. When you start a business, you don't have a lot of capital and you go into it. Sometimes you have a co-founder if you're lucky. Many times you're a solo founder and you go through this process trying to build this business and you end up being customer service. You end up being marketing. You end up being all of these titles which don't allow you to focus on the main title in order to grow the business, which is the CEO. So what we've done is we've given you guys that opportunity through our platform where you can enroll onto the site and essentially we're your team until you can afford to hire one. If that sounds like you, reach out to us at commasclub.com. In order to keep the community exclusive and effective, enrollment opens a few times a year. So go ahead and join our waitlist.